I've been thinking recently about choices. It's been said that the door of history turns on small hinges, and so do people's lives. The choices we make determine our destiny.
Carpe diem. Seize the day, boys. Make your lives extraordinary.
My brothers of the sword, let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions.
What is most important is that you have to dig deep down and ask yourselves, who do you want to be? Not what, but who.
Make a choice, right? You just decide what it's going to be, who you're going to be, how you're going to do it. Just decide.
When we face such temptations in our time, we must declare, as young Nephi did in his, I will give place no more for the enemy of my soul.
I have wrestled with an alligator. I done tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning, throw thunder
in jail. You're very fast. Keep moving, Brock. That's it. Keep going. Don't quit on me. Keep going.
Come on.
We're in hell right now. I believe you. And you can stay here, get the kick out of us, or we can fight our way back.
And then we interfere like who? All day like who? All night like who?
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now, go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Don't you quit. You keep walking. You keep trying. There is help and happiness ahead, a lot of it.
Here we go.
One more time.
Yeah.
Everybody's feeling fine. Here we go.
Now. Yes, here we go. EWP has got the flow.
We're back. Man.
The hell was that one?
We're children of the 90s.
Here we are.
Love it. Welcome back to the Eternal Warrior Podcast, helping young people in their quest for self-mastery, sharing stories from the battlefront in the war against Satan and pornography.
Yeah, and sharing our favorite songs from NSYNC and... Was that a Backstreet Boys?
I want to give it to JT and the crew.
And JT NSYNC. And
I'm not sure,
the NSYNC boys.
Write in and tell us at podcast@lifechangingservices.org.
if you know the answer.
Vote. Is it BSB or is it NSYNC? We don't remember.
And whoever gets it correct will win a free car.
Free validation that you know your 90s boy bands better than Spence and I do.
which is a great
That's honor. That's a championship belt right there.
It is.
Knowing your 90s boy bands better than us. But, man.
Welcome back.
Big day today.
Big day. It is a big day. Good day. We've got a very special guest here with us. We have a state champion in the house, Wes.
And it's not us.
I am not a state champ. I am a state champ just in life, though.
Yeah, you take state in many things.
I take state in life, but right. I just...
Flipping? You guys should see this guy bottle flip.
I am a national... I might be even a national champ in bottle flipping.
You might have taken nationals. You took your talents to Mexico City, I believe.
I did. I took my talents to Mexico City. Flipped those bottles like you would not believe. And, national champ.
That's great. Recapping our last week's conversation, we kind of did, I guess, a little bit of a buffet of some of the key principles of the Sons of Helaman program and Life Changing Services regarding addiction recovery. So if you want kind of a crash course in what it looks like, if you were to, you know, move forward in your recovery and wanted to come join us here at Life Changing Services, and the principles that we talk about here on the Eternal Warrior podcast, we did, you know, kind of a crash course in that last week. And, yeah, it kind of gives a brief overview of a lot of the things that we go more in depth in, on episodes like this one.
CS. So what is the most important, what is the most important part of recovery?
Oh, Wes, I know this say? One.
Do you?
Like the most important principle?
Like, yeah, like the most important thing you can do. If you're like, hey man, I've got the most important thing for you.
What's one thing that I need to do
for recovery? What would you say?
All of it.
Boom.
Just everything. The most important thing? Everything.
Yeah.
Lane Hilton.
Thank you, Lane Hilton.
That's right. Cool.
Dudes. Seriously. We got some more emails.
Yeah, we did. We got a really, really cool email from one of our listeners out there. I want to say his name is Kurt. I can't remember.
It was President Nelson.
Shut up.
JK. Okay, that's not true. I just lied. It wasn't.
There was a good friend of ours that she kind of wrote in and just told us some of the things he's learned.
Yeah.
And
it was really cool.
He's fighting for his awesome family, his kids, and just a good, good dude. And brother, we wish you well in your fight, and keep us in mind and keep us in the loop on how things are going. And for any of you listening out there, if you feel moved upon to start taking the next steps toward long-lasting recovery and you feel like you need some professional help, come reach out to us here at Life Changing Services and reach out to Cody Hawes, who has a sweet message for you right here.
If you're listening to the Eternal Warrior podcast, it's likely you're listening for you or someone you love. My name is Cody Hawes, and I'm a licensed therapist who helps those dealing with sexual addiction, betrayal trauma in general, marital recovery, and mental illness. Over the years, I've gathered resources to help those who desperately want to get on the right track. If you feel you are in need, please reach out to me by calling 385-519-6089. Again, 385-519-6089 to set up an initial assessment. God bless you on your journey, my friend, and keep listening to Wes and Spenny. And remember, there's no starting or stopping in recovery. Just keep going and doing.
Today's guest is a man of large stature, both spiritually and physically.
Guys, we're talking left tackle, football.
Blind Side.
Extraordinaire. Yes. Yes. Have you guys ever seen the movie The Blind Side?
I wouldn't say extraordinaire.
No.
But we
Cameron.
Would.
Cameron.
We
okay,
would.
Yes.
We
yes.
Are, you are extraordinaire.
Heavenly and, Father would. Right?
And state champion.
Of
tell us.
Debate.
Yes!
Like mostly state champion, yeah.
So actually today's episode, we're going to debate.
Let's do it.
With the true champion debater.
With a true champion debater, you'll be able to see him in action. I guess not see him.
We're bringing,
you can hear him.
See
we're
my
bringing
radio
a
knife
face.
To a gunfight, yeah. Basically.
We're what, sorry?
We're bringing a knife to a gunfight. I feel like this guy would debate.
He would.
Us to death.
Oh.
To death, yes.
Right to death. Our bodies would be dead. Correct.
No. So Cameron is our guest today.
Yes.
What an intro, huh?
And Cameron is an awesome warrior. He's got a lot of great things going on in his life right now. Cameron, why don't you tell our listeners what happened today?
Well, I just got ordained an elder to the Melchizedek Priesthood.
Wow.
It's freaking
dude.
Awesome.
And what's happening this week?
I'm receiving my endowments from my Father in Heaven.
Dude. Okay, what temple are you going through?
I'm probably going to go to Bountiful.
Okay.
Sam going to be there. Who's going to be there?
Invite some family. Invite the guy that gave me this pin. I'll probably tell you about him too. It's pretty freaking lit. Yeah.
Dude.
For those of you out there in listener land, which is all of you, Cameron indicated to tie tack
yes,
that
he's
wearing.
Yes, I have a tie pin.
That is a picture of a stripling warrior.
Yeah,
and
I can barely see it.
It is inscribed.
Would you like to get a closer
look? Warrior around it.
It says Stripling Warrior on it.
Yes. Wow.
Dude,
the Eternal Stripling Warrior podcast.
And then.
I love it.
The Eternal Stripling Warrior podcast. That's another podcast that we're going to start.
Helping Young Nephites in their quest for
I was going to say, though, tell them about the other, let's see, October?
Yes. I have my mission call, too. I've been called to serve in the Texas-Dallas mission, Spanish-speaking, and I leave October 30th.
S-O-S. S-O-S, Elder.
Muy divertido.
Hey, that's awesome. Dude, you already know Espanol. Did you learn in like high school?
Más o menos, dos años. Wow. Espanol and
2 years.
Escuela secundaria.
The squid was very tasty.
Yes. Squid was very tasty.
Escuela secundaria.
Escuela secundaria. The squid was very tasty.
Wes is a really good translator.
Really yes.
Of Spanish to
also
English.
Also speaks Cherokee, I'm
Yo
sure.
Yo soy un translador very good-o.
Very bien. Good-o.
Muy bien.
Sí.
Bien.
Dude, that's so... So, seriously, though, think about... You just have a lot going on for you, man.
Yeah.
That's so exciting.
Dude. It's got a lot going on. It's a lot of stuff I had to earn, you know?
Yes. And graduating... You just graduated high school.
Yep.
Off to the big world. And we've got a guy, because he was such a good debater, who will be a lawyer. But he won't be the type of lawyer like the wicked dudes in the Book of Mormon, like Korihor and stuff.
No.
You'll be one of the good
You'll
ones.
You'll be one of the goodies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The goodies. But dude, seriously, thank you for coming on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely honored.
Yeah.
This guy's a rock star.
Before we started our recording here, Cameron was telling us a little bit about his background, some of the things that he was involved in his youth. And Cameron, before we go into like your experience with pornography and masturbation, why don't you go ahead and just tell us a little bit about who you are, things that you're involved in, things you care about.
Well, I've done a lot of things in my lifetime. I did ballroom dance for 7 years. I think I took, was it second in the BYU National Dance Sport Championships too?
What the?
Yeah, when I was a sophomore in high school. It's
pretty
fun.
What the camera is going on?
Yeah, and I played cello in the orchestra for 4 years, so I did that too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I was in debate at dear old Davis High School.
And you played football.
And I played football.
Oh my gosh, did you have time to...
Breathe?
Did you,
no.
Yeah, did you breathe during that time period?
No, not really. Not at all.
A single breath was taken. Or sleep probably was not had. Well, I don't know, that's a lot
you know
of stuff.
What? Just hearing this from him?
Yeah.
My breath is taken away.
Oh, you're too kind.
I have no breath.
So, I mean, yeah, you're a very accomplished young man, right? You've been involved in a lot of different things.
That's so cool.
For someone that's so, I guess, driven and motivated like you, tell us how you came across, you know, our common enemy here. All right, so just kind of my story.
Let's hear it.
Yeah.
You know what? Biggest thing I learned, though, is that, like, I learned my worth because of how early Satan kicked me. Like, he did not want me to become a good man at all. And so I was about 10 years old, and my family had all gone out to a soccer game. I was left home alone. Family computer was on in the living room. And I just, like, it was almost like Satan was like, think about this, think about this, think about this. Like, I would never have, like, thought about that on my own anyway. And so in my very obscure and primitive vernacular, I always started to... looking for stuff online, had, you know, no idea what I was really looking for, and Spence shaking his head at me right now. You good?
Oh. Keep going.
Okay, we're good? Okay,
yes. He's good.
Okay, yes.
I was shaking. Oh, were you saying that I was shaking my head?
Yeah.
I was, because I'm like, gosh, this freaking Satan.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, dude, gosh.
Spence is a very intense listener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Very intense listener.
You thought that I was like, don't tell that part. No. No. I was just shaking my head because I'm like, gosh, that little bastard, Satan, man. He's such a little punk.
Yeah. So I remember I was like walking up the stairs and my computer's like right next to like the top of the stairs. But there's kind of like this, I don't know how to explain it, but there's kind of like a wall where you can like hide. So you can't like see me if I was walking up the stairs like right next to the computer. And so like I was walking up the stairs and I could hear my mom go, like panic, you know, and she goes, Aaron, come here, which is my dad's name. And, you know, my dad came over and she's like, look, and I was sitting there and I was like, crap, I think I know what they're seeing. And so I panicked and I ran back downstairs and I like tried to climb out the window or something to get out of the house. I was like, oh no.
Like, I'm done for.
Definitely didn't know how to take the screen out of the window. So I was trapped like a stray dog. It was scary. But my parents never talked to me about it for like
really
a few days. Yeah. And then my dad was like, hey, you want to go play basketball with me? I was like, sure. Cause my dad was really big into basketball at that time. So he took me down to just kind of the park along this road right here, called the Hoops. And, as we were driving back, he's like, want to go get some breakfast? I was like, sure. So he drives me out to like Denny's or something. I don't remember. And he's like, hey, mom and I saw what you were looking up on the computer. Do you want to talk about it? And like, I had like kind of just got the feeling that what I was looking at was like not good. I didn't find anything though. Like when I looked for it, like my vocabulary was so horrible. I was using all the primitive like mommy daddy terms that they would tell me, you know, so I found nothing, but my parents were still so concerned that I was looking for it. And he's like, did you see anything? I was like, no, I don't really know what was going on. You know, I was just a 10-year-old kid, right? I was like, oh, right. I don't know. I didn't see anything. And he's like, I was like, I guess it's just not on the internet. And my dad's like, oh, geez, you know, because he could see that I wasn't really typing up anything specific or
right
or correctly pronounced. And so, yeah. And so I just told him, I was like, he's like, are you just curious or what's going on? I was like, no, it's not. I don't know. You know, I was like super like tense, like,
oh, I bet.
And then I think that was kind of almost the end of it for a little while, almost a year, I think. And my parents went out of town and they left me with a babysitter. And like we had just got like, you know, I was 11 now. I was about to start junior high. My parents had gotten me and some of my younger siblings like little tablets to play on for Christmas or something, just because.
And are you the oldest in your family?
I am the oldest. Okay. I've got three younger brothers. And so, you know, I was like, oh, mom and dad are at home. And I was just thinking like, oh, I didn't ever find anything. I wonder if anybody's put anything on there that would help me understand. Cause I got no, like I went through like the maturation program and the teacher was awful for it. It was like some guest speaker, some lady came and was like, here's this and this and this and this. Any questions? Nope. See you later. And like my mom and dad couldn't go to it. So I was there with my friend and his mom.
Oh God.
And so man. Like, you know, my next door neighbor friend and I were sitting there like,
this is so, oh, maturation day.
It's so weird.
Sister Richardson, can we go home now?
But,
seriously though.
Yeah, it was odd. So I didn't ever like learn anything. And I think that's like part of what sparked the imagination, like the net, like just kind of being curious about it. Like I didn't understand. And so I went looking for more stuff just later on. And, you know, and my dad ended up calling me the next day. He had a whole like system wired out. So like he would get a thing on his, it was a BlackBerry phone at the time, I think, but like just a report of everything that had been seen on the internet that day. And so, he was like, do you want to talk about what you're looking up? And I was like, no, it's fine, I'm good. You know, I was like, because I, like, at that point, I knew I had done something wrong, but I didn't, like, register as the addiction yet, because it was like, I was already feeling like, hey, go back and look for more, because you still don't understand yet. And it was more like a curiosity thing to start with, but it develops really fast.
Yep.
If you don't have the right kind of guidance on it. And it was just something that was never really talked about in my family at all.
No.
You know, especially because I don't think my parents were expecting it to kick it so young.
Right.
So.
Well, then it's hard for them to know exactly.
Good.
Sorry, I'm just playing with boxes over here.
But then it's hard to know.
In a china shop.
For like your parents.
Yeah. Right?
Like how do they, it's such a hard.
I'm so impressed with the things that they had in place.
Yeah, they were very prepared after that first time. They were like, we got to get ready for this. So they were well aware that something could go down, but they didn't ever like talk about it with us, which I feel like was like the one thing they were lacking on it.
Right.
Well, I can only imagine that they're trying to figure out how to talk about it, right? Like,
yeah.
I think this is every parent's greatest fear.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to fruition, they're almost paralyzed with like, okay, well, like we've got to handle this. How do we handle it? Maybe it'll take care of itself, but I don't know. And so all of that, and that's Satan working on them, right?
Yeah.
And their brain chemistry of like keeping them in a holding pattern of inactive, of
it's like, it would be embarrassing. Inaction. Don't tell them. Don't
exactly,
help.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
Let them figure it out. And then you can help later.
Uh-huh. It's like,
well, and I think one of the lies that Satan tells parents that I've heard is, well, if we don't talk about it, then they won't ever, like, if we talk about it, then they're going to be more curious.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened with me.
Mm.
If you remember, if you go back and listen to the episode where I spoke with my mom, she talked with one of my aunts about, you know, when I first, like,
oh,
you was getting into stuff.
And
my aunt gave her the, I guess, prevailing wisdom at the time is, Don't talk about it. If you talk about it, it'll only make things worse. Oof. You know?
But it's, here's the unfortunate truth is that our kids are going to be seeing and hearing things from somewhere. So best hear it from us than to hear it from somebody else, or to just see, like you, right? Just like kind of stumbling upon it innocently. And I mean, we have to be proactive and talk about this.
So it sounds like you're still just really kind of curious at this point. Tell us how that really kind of snowballed to addiction and things like that.
Well, it's kind of hard to draw the line because I was still pretty young when it started transitioning over. And then, you know, that was the whole, you know, pornography thing developing. Masturbation is developed totally separately. Like, I didn't even put the two together until I was like 12 or 13.
Interesting.
But then you're like, wow, these work really good together.
I know, right? That was actually, I got hit with both pretty young. I was probably 10 or 11 when I started being super curious. So,
oh my gosh.
And so, it was actually the time when my dad called is when I had figured out that they had gone, when they were on vacation, that I'd figured out they'd go together. And so that was like, you know, super panic mode. And like that Sunday we had, the babysitters went home. So I was in charge of all the boys, right? And so my parents were still on vacation and they were going to go to their own ward and I was supposed to be in charge of them. And so I was like, it's okay. I can just take the sacrament. I'll be fine. You know, like I will never do that again. I feel awful that I don't want that in my life anymore, you know? But then like seeing as like one makes the other more powerful, you know, with Mr. and Mr. P, it was like I was just drawn to it. Like it's because I mean, that's the worst part is that you know you're not supposed to be drawn to it, but you are anyway. And so I told my dad, I was like, and he was like, Dad, I'm so sorry. Here's my tablet. I left a message on it for you. And I had wrote the whole thing like I had taken the sacrament. I will never do that again. I feel so sorry. And I thought it was really weird because I thought he'd like take it and like ground me and then like that was like and I'd be in big trouble. But like he was like, this is something we need to go see the bishop about. You know, I was like probably like barely a deacon at this point. And so I was like, I don't really want to. I was like, we'll be good about it. He was like, okay. And so I had gone, you know, another little while of being pretty good about it, but like it was still like the pain of having to like be caught by my dad like went away really quickly. Like it was just gone. And so I was drawn right back to it again.
And you forget, right?
Yeah, I mean, you
forget
do.
The feel, that pain, and all that you can remember is that the excitement, the those chemicals dripping into your brain.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So then I ended up getting a hold of this like smartphone, like one of the first smartphones that was like ever made, and like my mom used it for a few years, and we just kept it up in this like cupboard, right? And I was like, oh, I'll see if that still works. And so I got it and like, you know, ran down to my room with it, and I've been sleeping in the basement since then. You know, my room's in the basement. And so it still had, you know, I plugged it in, it still worked, it was still connected to the internet, and it was just YouTube, you know, like that's there's still some nasty stuff and get on there. And so that went on for several years. I was probably 16. I had been going on for that long until I was like 16. My parents had no idea. Like my dad had just, the thing was that his thing had only checked what like the internet browsers would pick up, but I was using like an app thing. So like would never like register it. So I was like, oh man, I'm safe. I can do this, you know, as much as I want, never get caught. And then, you know, I was, you know, probably 16 when my dad was like, I found this in your room, because like I had to like hide it in a different place every night because I was so paranoid, which is, it's like the worst feeling ever. I know like a lot of people, probably people that are listening to this too, that are still stuck in that cycle, that are living with other people, like that panic, that fear to hide is such a strong satanic lie. Like he makes you think that like if someone finds this, your life is over.
Yeah.
But I want to say this real quick, but like,
yeah,
like when you do open up about it and you stop hiding, it's like the most relieving feeling ever. Like it sucks when you're about to do it, but then like the second you do it, you're just like just a wash of like, it's out there, like I'm gonna get help now.
It's crazy because I love how you said that. You feel like your life is over, and then all of a sudden when you're met with love and understanding and hope instead of catastrophe, it's like my life's not over. It's just starting.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's amazing. It's almost like a baptism is a rebirth, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're being just reborn as an honest person. And all of a sudden you're like, holy cow, I am spotless and blameless before God and man. And that's a really rare and special feeling.
Yeah. Because you've spent many years living in that lie, living in that fear, like you say.
It takes work to maintain that.
And it's exhausting.
Crazy. Yeah.
And it is awful, right? It is the worst. Oh man.
I haven't felt that like fear in so long. I'm like, I'm all getting like anxious right now. Just right? Like remembering the fear.
Because you live in this, because you want it and you need it still, but you know that you have to find ways to lie about it or to find ways to hide it. And living, I'm telling you that, and you guys can, I'm sure, talk to this as well, but that is not you're not free, right? You are living in a trap of lie after lie, after deceit, after hiding, after anything in the dark. And that's a scary place.
Yeah.
A scary place. So then how did it then, he finds the phone.
Yeah.
And then that's when it comes back out.
Yeah. And so he's like, you're still dealing with this. And I was like, no, I just watched like funny videos until like, 3 a.m. I wasn't doing anything. Yeah, there's such a drive to like deny everything, especially because he couldn't like prove I was doing it, and I was trying to look for every way out of it, and it was horrible. And so eventually he knew that like this, I was not doing that, there was no way, and so he took it away. And then that next Christmas, like, my other three brothers had been begging for smartphones, because this is like right when like the smartphone craze was happening. And so my dad ended up giving into that, bought some very cheap, low capability smartphones for the three oldest, including me. But I had just had another encounter with pornography like a month before, and so my dad was really hesitant to give me a phone. He's like, this could destroy you if you don't use it carefully. And I was like, okay, but I wanted to be like all my friends. I was like, I just need a smartphone. And so I took it, and it was going well, because I was like, I know I need to prove dad wrong, and I had to prove myself right that I can do this on my own. But that slipped real quick. It lasted like less than a month, and I was looking stuff up, and so that was pretty insane. They got that taken away from me. My dad hid it, unfortunately, in the same place that he hid that other smartphone that my mother had. And so 16-year-old me was like, oh look, there's my old phone. And so I took that behind his back without him knowing. And like, that's the worst thing, is that like, you'll go to any measures to get what you feel like you need. And it sucks when you realize you've done it, but you're already like trapped.
Oh,
like, yeah. It's like, you're like, I can't believe I would never have done that about anything else. Like if that was $100 bill, I wouldn't have gone and snatched that.
Right.
If that was $1,000 bill just lying up on that cupboard, I wouldn't have stolen that.
Which it goes to show that there's something more at play. Yeah, right?
Exactly.
It's junkie mentality.
Yes.
Right? Like,
oh, 100%.
And I think we've all been there.
Oh.
And you look back on it and it's so like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that for a fix or for something. Right. And you just like, man, why don't I have the willpower? You look back on it the next day and you're like, I didn't want to do that. Why did I do it in the moment? Like, I'm such a junkie. And then Satan can come in and beat us up with things like that, of like, you don't really want to change. You don't really want to fix things. This is just the way you are, and you always will be. And it's just, yeah.
And then he'll come in there and try to validate. He'll
kick you while you're down.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
And say, well, it's because you're of who you are. You're a bad person because of this, because of the lies. Like, and then he just, oh man.
Yeah. But when my parents had first found that first phone that my mom used, they were like, you need to go talk to the bishop now. Like, this, we're making the appointment for you, because you need to go, get this covered right now. You need Heavenly Father's help.
Yeah.
And so I met with my bishop, who at the time was just like the sweetest, nicest old man, but didn't really know how to help me. So he's like, we'll just set small goals, and you can report back to me every week, and we'll have like code words we'll use. But like, I mean, that like wasn't enough, I could be like, I had a good week, but like I didn't, cause I had just gotten this, my old phone again, it was crazy. But,
right.
yeah, it was just like, it was a nightmare. And so, my mom had been praying for a bishop that would help me, like, for a long time, because this bishop just he's such a sweet man, but just had no idea how to help me with the gravity of the situation that I was in. And then we got a new bishop, Bishop John. He's the man. He's the man, by the way, like, comparable to Cody Hawes.
What?
Yeah. Whoa. Yeah, I would go there.
High praise for Bishop John.
Yeah.
That is high praise for any man to be compared to Cody Hawes.
And he started me rolling, and he's like, hey, there's this program called Sons of Helaman, and you might not want to check it out or anything, because it's like a group program, but they've got this book that I think you should read, and it was the Like Dragons They Fight book, and I was like, okay, I'll read up on it. And I was still in that addicted mindset, and I was almost 17, and I still didn't understand the role that Satan played in this. Like, I thought it was just me, which is, like, a horrible feeling. But we've talked about this on a million episodes, right? So I won't get into
that. But like, no, but for the people that maybe this is their first time listening or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to identify the enemy. We can't keep carrying the guilt and shame that is associated with this. We've got to give credit where it's due. Of course Satan's at play here.
Yep.
Why would we want to take credit for this?
Yeah.
Right?
Ooh.
But, yeah. And so, where was I?
Oh, you were just saying...
Bishop John.
Sons of Helaman,
yeah. And so, I was reading the book, and I was like, man, these are some really great concepts. And then but then, a lot of the book is talking about how, like, the group setting works so well.
Right.
And, you know, now looking back at it, I knew Satan was like, no, don't go there. You don't want to be part of a group. That'd be horrible. It'd be embarrassing. You don't want to do that. Get away from there. Stop reading the book. It's just trying to upsell a program, right? You don't want to join that program. It's expensive. Like, all these things he would just try to throw in my head. And I bought into it. And I didn't even know I was buying into Satan at the time. I was like, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea, because I shouldn't finish this book because it's just trying to sell me on a program I don't want to join. And so...
Oh, my gosh.
I kept trying to do stuff with my bishop, and it just wasn't, you know, going very well. I was still struggling. At this point, I had taken away most things with... Mr. P, Mr. M was still prevailing, though. I had decided through a lot of white knuckling to just give up all my electronic devices, like everything, you know, my computers, my laptop. I didn't have, you know, my phone was a little slide flip phone looking thing for a long time. And so as I was on that kind of clean streak from Mr. P, Mr. M became like a little bit easier to get over, but I still didn't understand the enemy, right?
Yeah.
And so, and I was like, I went on, we were competing in Berkeley, California for debate, which was a fun tournament.
Dude, right? I bet. That's sick. That's cool.
And I got back and, well, I'm just going to know this part. I was there and I had to go back to my hotel room early because my event had ended for the day and we'll restart the next day. So I got on the early bus back and I was there in the hotel room by myself with my study computer.
Mm.
And I was like, no, I've been going really well for like almost a month now. Like, there's no way I'm going to lose this to myself, right? I thought it was like, I'm not going to give in to what I want, which, you know, I still didn't get it. And so, of course, I ended up losing a really horrible battle. And I, you know, lied about it to my mom. And then I could just feel the sinking feeling again. Like, I had been doing so well. And then I had done this. And then I had lied about it. So then I got home and I was like, all right, it's time to change. You know, I was like, Mom, I lied to you. You know, because I had kind of like hit the bottom on that trip. Because it was like, it was just horrible. And I had to kind of like, it was like on the first day too. So I had to go like the rest of the trip, which is with that guilt. And I didn't perform very well for that whole trip. And so I got home and I was like, I want to join that program that Bishop talked about, because I had been going to, you know, LDS family services and
12-step. Did you do some 12-step?
Actually, didn't ever do 12-step.
Okay,
but I also had another,
just like individual counseling.
Yeah, like a social worker too, out like based out in Ogden. He's a great guy, but just like
cool.
I didn't have the right tools yet. I didn't, you know, like have a program that understood the whole situation. And so I was like, I want to try this program. And my mom was like, okay, let's get you signed up. And so we went and met with Cody. And I mean, all this time, the part that hurt the worst is that like, it's a little bit easier to deal with an addiction when you don't believe that there's a way you can get out of it.
Mm.
When you're like, there's no way this is possible. But like, I have always had like a firm belief in the atonement, which made it suck even more. Cause I was like, I believe that I can get over this, but I can't.
Wow.
It's like, this isn't fair to me, because I know that, you know, I had a great testimony of the church, of, you know, the restoration, and but I could not get over this one thing. And I was like, there's no way that, you know, like I could never answer the question. I would just kind of like short out my brain if I tried to think about it. And so I ended up talking to Cody, and Cody was like, man, you have an awesome testimony. He's like, you're going to be out of here real quick. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, he's like, that's one of the hardest things to do is to instill the testimony in people. So I was, I mean, I'm glad that my parents had raised me in that good way, but, yeah. And so I started coming, and the first week I was determined to, you know, get a perfect week, 'cause I wanted to have a good face for all the new guys that I'd meet in the, YSA group.
Yes.
Wednesday night. But, yeah, it was great. And so I got to meet everybody, and I had a perfect week. And then the next week I had like a -5, like I just crashed because I didn't understand everything yet. Right. Mm-hmm.
You just like kind of like white knuckle through it. Yeah. Sorry, I'm still active listening. Sorry again. Yeah. I'm shaking my head and doing the. I need to stop doing that. Oh. I apologize, Cameron. I'm like, and, oh man, I can't see. Because everything is like, it's resonating so deeply with my experience.
And as Cam, for those of you who aren't familiar with the like -5 thing, there's.
Oh yeah.
The
yeah.
Sons of Helaman program kind of gamifies recovery. So together as a team each week in your group, you report on your won versus lost battles.
Yeah.
And there's kind of an aggregate score there. So if you come to group, you'll learn that. But otherwise, it's not crucial. But basically, Cam lost some battles
tough week.
Like all of the battles I lost that week. That was a horrible week. And then, you know, everyone was like, it's all right. Just get back up. Keep trying. And then, like, that was the first time that, like, people hadn't gotten mad at me for doing that.
Hmm.
Like, my parents had always been, like, upset, except for that very first time when my dad was trying to be more, you know, explanatory about it and want to talk it out. But like, they're like, it's all right. You know, just don't give up. And you know, when they ask me, you know, why do you fight? Why don't you give up? Which is something we do in group every time, every day. I was like, I just want to earn my place here. You know, like you guys are all so awesome and I want to be great men like you. And then I think it was Trey was like, you don't earn your place here. You're here. And that's all that it means to us is that you're here trying. He's like, so go home and keep trying. But then, like, that was the week that we had really learned about the role. Like, we learned about the satanic spin a lot, and we learned about the chemical scale. And then I think Cody said, like, just the words very straightforward. He's like, Satan is our enemy. He's like, it is not you. And, like, I kind of, like, had to, like, take a step back, and, like, I was like, whoa. You know, I haven't really thought about that before. And so that's kind of when it all started changing, you know. And then from that week forward, I haven't lost a battle. So,
dude, let's go.
This week will be week 11. Get my general's wing. Ring.
Your general's wing.
I get my general's ring. Not this Wednesday, but next Wednesday.
So next Wednesday.
Yeah.
Holy smokes, dude. That's so dope.
Yeah. I'm not giving it to Satan. He's the freaking worst, man.
He's the worst. And the fact that we don't. That he's so good at what he does that we can't even identify that there's an enemy there. You think it's us.
Yeah. One of the things that bothers me the most is that Satan is willing to tell you that he does not even exist. He won't even take credit for his thing in order to make you believe that this is you and to like make you not believe that Heavenly Father is there for you.
Whoa.
Like he's willing to sacrifice like his own role in it to make you feel horrible.
Wow. I'd never really thought about it that way. That's like, super dope. Like he's not like even willing Satan, to take everything. His own.
Like Satan's vanity does not need to be satisfied. All exactly. He cares about is our own demise.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, even thinking about one of those lawyers in the Book of Mormon, right? I think it was Korah Horror that says there is no devil, right?
Yeah.
So even like, you know what I mean? Like the devil himself doesn't want people to know that he's there in the background lurking and doing his thing. Dude, your story is awesome.
It's mine. I take credit for it. I own it, as you guys would put it.
Oh, dude. Cameron.
So, Cam, let me ask you then.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk today a little bit about how your experience has been a process and not an event.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what you mean when you say that your recovery is a process and not just a specific one-time deal?
It's actually another lie of Satan to think that, you know, go 12 weeks and you're fine. You'll never have to deal with this again. I will go away and never bother you again. That's exactly what he's telling you, but he'll use a little bit simpler terms. You know, he'll be like, it'll just be super easy then, you know, it'll just get easier as time goes on. And, that's just a lie. It's a lie. What I meant when I said that was that everything is a process. Like, it's the process of you getting stronger. It was a few months after my new bishop had been put in. We watched a video in my priest quorum, and it was a super cheesy like church video, and it was a cartoon of this little boy who was just walking down the street, and this wind was blowing at the boy, and he kept falling over because of the wind. And so then it's like, you know, when your testimony is weak or something, but it was talking about something totally different. But I was thinking about like me in this situation. It's like then he started like, you know, believing in himself, and he started walking forward and, you know, believing in God, and started getting this like kind of goldish aura around him, you know, super, super cheesy. But like then stuff started flying in the wind and it hit him and he'd fall over, you know, like a mailbox or something would hit him. Yeah. And he'd go down on one knee, be like, ah, but he'd get up and he'd keep trying, you know, he'd keep going forward. And then the next time the mailbox came, he'd move out of the way. And then he'd jump over the mailbox, and the wind is still blowing, but it's blowing hard. And soon there's like tanks and stuff rolling in the wind. But now he's like jumping on top of the tanks and like jumping back and forth. And I looked at that and I was like, it's not getting any easier. Their obstacles are getting harder, but he is adapting and he's changing the way that he acts to the situation. And it's becoming easier for him. But the situation is just getting... Spence is so just good. Celebrating.
It's just because it's that is so Cam, dude.
You're Spence just
so,
gave him the touchdown arms.
Yeah,
but the wind. The point is, the wind doesn't stop. The wind will keep going forever and ever and ever. But that battle for him in facing the wind is so much easier because he's, you know, faced the battles and he's training and he's working hard and he's getting better. So when I say that it's a process, it means that you have to like, you can't expect this to be over as soon as you like graduate from the program per se. Like, or you go a certain amount of time being clean. I mean, it's, I think the hardest thing for the addicted brain to understand is that, like, you will deal with this probably for forever. But that's the thing, is that that boy looked super happy jumping over those tanks and whatnot, you know? Like, it was still really hard, but that doesn't mean that it's going to make you miserable because you got to fight it for forever. Like, because I know, Wes, you talk about how much you just love sucker punching Satan in the face, right?
I love it.
Yeah, it's the best.
One of my favorite activities.
I know, right? But that's the thing, is that they tell you that hard work, like the satanic lies that hard work is exhausting. You know, our level ones in the chemical scale say, I don't feel like I don't want to. That's the first thing Satan hits you with, is you don't feel like doing something hard. Because doing hard work is gratifying. And it is renewing. And that's the one thing that it's come, like, that we need to accept is just like, as I work hard, it will get easier because I'm learning how to fight the battle.
Wow.
So it's not a lifetime of just facing every battle and it being really hard, but then you just got to deal with it and white knuckle your way through it all the time. It's as you learn and as you develop, it becomes easier when you're willing to like fight the battles and you're willing to do hard work.
Whoa. Okay. There was so much wisdom in there. Cameron, that was so dope, dude. I just like touchdown. I seriously, I can't stop.
Do you know what his story reminds me of? And especially that last principle.
Yeah.
It's a poem we memorized, Spence. Right? First off, Cam, to articulate this, could you tell our live studio audience how tall you are?
I am 6'7".
Dude. 6'7".
About 330-something pounds.
Dude.
Big guy. Can't buy clothes in the store anymore.
You got like prescription pants on over there.
I got size 17 shoes on.
So oh my god. Cam, dude, you're so
a big
dumb.
Dude. You are what I would call a tree of a man. And there's a poem by a guy named Douglas Mallock called Good Timber. And Spence and I memorized this poem one time. And so where I falter here, Spence is going to help me out because I think he knows it better than I do. But it goes a little something like this. The tree that never had to fight for sun and sky and air and light, that stood out in the open plain and always got his share of rain, never became a forest king, but lived and died a scrubby thing. The man that never had to win his share of sun and sky and light and air, who, you know, the next part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the man who never had to win his share of sun or sky or light or air never became a manly man,
no,
but lived
a
and
thing
died as he began.
Right.
Oh, sorry. I think we okay. missed. Let me start at the beginning, because then my memorized brain will come back. Okay. So the tree that never had to fight for sun or sky or air or light, but stood out in the open plain and always got its share of rain, never became a forest king, but lived and died a scrubby thing. The man who never had to toil to gain or farm his patch of soil, who never had to win his share of sun or sky or light or air, never became a manly man, but lived and died as he began. Good timber does not grow with ease. The stronger wind, the stronger trees.
The further sky, the greater length.
The more the storm,
the more the strength.
By
sun and cold,
by rain and snow, in trees and men, good timbers grow.
Where deepest lies the forest growth, we find the patriarchs of both. And they hold counsel with the stars, whose broken branches show the scars of many winds and much of strife. This is the common law of life.
That's powerful.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Got that deep breath.
Old brother Malak.
That's so dope. Well, you think about that. Mm-hmm. The strongest trees are those that have fought for what they've got, right?
Yeah.
They've fought for more sky. They fought for more water. They've put themselves out there. Mm-hmm. And that's how we are as individuals.
Yeah. A few months ago, I was with some friends down in Bryce Canyon National Park.
One of our sponsors.
The BCNP. And we were walking through the Needles District or something like that. And there was this tree growing out the side of the clay there in the ground. And it was like this corkscrew pine coming out of the ground. I don't know if any of you guys have been down there, but some of these trees grow in such a way because they have to take such firm root in such sedimentary soil and also with such intense wind right there. But to see how this tree has adapted to dominate the landscape, to be an absolute forest king in a place where it's hard to get water and where the wind is strong. And there aren't a lot of trees standing there, right?
Oh, whew. Just like Cameron, your explanation of that and then your addition to that, Wes, this is like beautiful, right? Because it really, as we've talked about before in the podcast, our brains are trained to do whatever is easiest, right? The natural man is an enemy to God, right? Path of least resistance, that efficiency mechanism. We want the most reward with the least amount of work. Unfortunately, Satan knows that and will dive into that. Like you said, you're tired. You're exhausted. Fighting is hard. Fighting takes too much out of you. It requires too much. It would be easier if you could just be done with it. Can you just be done with it and just rest?
You guys can't see, but I mean, Spence has got his imposing finger pointed at me right now.
Oh, it's because Satan freaking just, he digs into that, right? And he says, it's too hard, or the wind will come, or this will, oh man, it's so frustrating. But what you said is beautiful. The fight is it's invigorating, is it not? Mm-hmm. When I am at my best, it's because I am fighting and like living. It's not I don't know why my brain buys into that idea.
Well, and the principles that we talked about last week, kind of the crash course, what the program here at Sons of Helaman at Life Changing Services is about creating different paths of least resistance. It's about helping make it easier for us to do the right thing than the wrong thing. And a lot of that is involves surrounding ourselves with the right people, the right activities, developing new neural pathways in our brains, and also adjusting our environments to support the actions that we're trying to take. But since our brain is already wired a certain way, as the addicted brain is, the moments of when we're right up against it, that's really when we need to tap into our reasons for fighting, develop that warrior chemistry to help us come out on the other end victorious.
Yeah.
But you're right. It absolutely is exhausting if we have to maintain that level of warrior chemistry fighting all the time. And that's where everything else in the program helps support creating a more conducive environment.
Yep.
So we can't avoid every battle, but we can eliminate a lot of them and be ready for the ones when we really need to be ready for them.
Ooh, well said.
That's a good one.
Very well said.
Thinking battlefields.
Cameron, what do you feel like has been like it kind of sounds like a switch was flipped a little bit, kind of like this. I don't know. Do you feel that way?
I think I made it sound that way, but it really was like, I thought I was going to go like 8 weeks before I would start winning. Like, I think, I don't want to say, because it wasn't easy. Like, and it was never like a flipped switch. It was a lot of hard work to start with and a lot of commitments to make. And then a lot of following through on the principles that we taught. We were talking about this right before we started recording, but it was that, like, doing your manpower and stuff, you don't do that and win battles so you can graduate. You do that to prepare you to win battles, and then graduating is a side.
It's like a advantage. Byproduct. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a byproduct of that.
Yeah, graduation just happens.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's not the goal, right? I mean, what we want is to learn how to fight this, like, for forever.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Dude, and your example of that little boy, little cartoon. I love the mailbox. That's so great. Right? Watch out for the mailboxes, you know, the flying mailboxes. But yeah, like that idea, that principle being taught that there will always be something else that comes along in life. That's just mortality, is there's going to be new challenges. New things are going to come our way. But what I love about the principles we've talked about today is that it, like, and just in general in the podcast, is it prepares us. It prepares us for those, to be able to adapt, right? And to be able to fight in those times of need. I love how you said that, Wes, that it's like you find a new lifestyle that fits recovery, like fits winning. And then you're preparing yourself for when you know that those new battles will come.
Right. And what we've kind of championed here in the podcast too, is this is not just recovery from addiction. This is recovery from the natural man in all its forms. When we start to live an active recovery lifestyle, we become a very impressive and incredible human being. We start to become debate champions. Like, we start Cameron, to become dude. Ballroom dancers. We start to become blindside left tackles, you know, and we become excellent at everything that we do. And the Lord fills our lives with light. Because we're too busy to sin at that point, right?
Right. How do you think these principles will help you as a missionary?
Oh, well, because I've got a lot of reasons to be worried about going on a mission.
Right.
But, I mean, just knowing that, like, there's a way to get over any obstacle, and that's through preparation and with the help of our Heavenly Father. Like, I'll have some big obstacles. Like, I've got some friends, you know, that I don't want to leave. I've got a good job right now, and I mean, I'm going to be going away for 2 years. I'm worried about losing the education I already have. And I mean, those are all things that I'm, like, worried about. A few other things as well. But, what I've learned from this, at least how this is going to help me on my mission, is that, like, no matter what you're worried about, like, Heavenly Father is there for you if you're willing to let him help you out. Right. Mm. I mean, it's all about willingness, right? Once you're willing to make commitments and you're willing to serve others and you're willing to, you know, take the steps for, you know, recovery too, that's when Heavenly Father's like, I'm so glad you want to accept all these blessings I have to give you. Here you go, right? I mean, a lot's happened for me in the past few weeks. Like, I got my mission call. I've been ordained. I'm going to the temple soon. I mean, these are all incredible things, right? And so, I just feel like it's once we're willing and able and we want to make the commitments, then.
So compare then how you feel now to what you did kind of at that lowest point on that trip.
I mean, this is going to sound really like cliche, but it's dark to light. It was being confused. It was being, you know, unknowledgeable. It was like, it was fighting a war you didn't know who you were fighting against, you know? Like, you were suffering, but you didn't know why. You hated yourself for it. I mean, it's misery over glory. And that's, like, man, I mean, what I feel now is, like, I mean, I want to say this in a very humble manner, but, like, I just feel like the man right now, you know? Like, I'm taking advantage of everything that my Father in Heaven has to offer me. And, you know, I hate to say it, but I'm almost grateful that I was able to experience that darkness. Like, because how would I understand the light that I have now if I didn't understand the void of light that I had before?
Cameron. Holy crap. Mm. You are so freaking dope. It like hurts my heart.
Thank you. I've got one more question unless you have any more.
No, I think I just, the only other thing I would love that. Cause it really, is it not? It's the dark compared with the light. And Cameron, that's something you should repeat every single day, dude. I am the man. Like and not that it's because of me though too. I am a son of God.
It's me and the big man upstairs, right?
Yeah, like there's nothing that I cannot accomplish with him on my team.
If you're a son of God, then what is your potential?
Everything.
Like, what do puppies grow up to be?
Big dogs.
Big dogs. Right?
Yes. Big puppies. But yeah, I just keep big puppies. Big puppies. But keep that same, as a missionary, it's going to be tough, dude. Like, you're going to be like, gosh, I am, oh man, Satan will be like, dude, you suck as a missionary. You can't teach. You don't know the language. Gosh, you're worthless. No, dude. Satan, go back to hell.
No es la verdad.
Comprendo español. Go back because I am here. I've sacrificed everything to be here to serve other people.
Yeah.
I am a son of God. Like, and just repeat those things that you said. Beautiful. But yeah, what's your question, Wes? What question do you have for Cameron?
Cameron, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Why do you fight? And why won't you give up?
Why do I fight? Why don't I give up? First off is for my mission, obviously. I mean, I get to go serve people in Texas, right? I mean, that's something I would have never comprehended I would be able to do in a different language, too. Like, I have this opportunity to go and serve God's children, the people that have the same potential that I do. I have the honor of being able to be the tool in God's hands to bring people to the same light that I've experienced. I fight for my fellow warriors here. Just to help them, because it's been kind of hard being in the position I've been in. Like, I've been winning a lot, and it's hard to see my fellow warriors not do so perfect. I mean, that's I guess I got lucky. I don't know, but not really. It was a lot of work. But I fight just to be there for them, to help them know that they're not alone, because you're never alone.
Yep.
You know, you've got you know, me, one of their compatriots there, and then they've got their father in heaven too. I fight because I hate Satan. I say hate, but I just dislike that entity hate. So much.
I think hate is appropriate.
Yeah, he's
and desirable.
The worst undesirable man ever. He decided that he was going to mess with the wrong man at a very early age. He unknowingly used this sin to make me, you know, it was the forger's fire, right? The hotter the flame, the nicer the steel. But he didn't know that. He risked everything and he's losing, and I'm gonna make sure he loses. I mean, he doesn't even care about me losing. The only reason that he's hurting me so much is because he hates our Father in heaven. Mm-hmm. I'm not willing to be the collateral damage of his war against the Father. I'm gonna make sure that he knows that it was a mistake to mess with me, to mess with everyone else who's trying to recover as well. And I fight for my parents. They have loved me through this whole thing, and have given me all the support in the whole world. That's, you know, they are just truly some of the best parents ever. And that's why I fight. That's why I don't give up.
Dude.
Look out, Dallas.
Seriously. Watch out, all you Latinos down there. You're going to get bautizado by this guy, okay? Baptized.
Yes.
Bautizado. Significa to be baptized.
No, but seriously, thank you.
Yeah.
Cameron, for coming on.
It's an honor.
You are awesome. And I know that everyone listening can feel that same, dude. Like, you are, you really are just as big spiritually as you are physically, man. You are a giant of a man. And
how safe would you feel having him be your companion? Oh,
100% safe.
100% safe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, everything's bigger in Texas. Everybody's my size, probably. Yeah. That's
everything's bigger. Big they say that.
I do say that.
Everything's bigger in Texas. That's a good point. Mm. No, but seriously, you're gonna be amazing, dude. You are gonna be awesome.
Thanks for your story, Cam.
Yep. Thank you for sharing.
Thank
Keep
you.
Fighting.
Thank you.
Any last remarks there, Weston?
No, I mean,
we say it every week, but we're looking for awesome people to have on the podcast. If you feel like your story is one that would be worth sharing, and all of your stories are worth sharing, but if you feel like you have some specific things you'd like to share with our community, let us know. podcast@lifechangingservices.org. We'd love to be able to bring you in if we can, and if it fits our schedule coming up.
Yes, please reach out. We love you. Thank you for listening, and let's go become that big tree, huh?
Be a state champion today.
Go get it. See ya.